Hi guys, it's Becca Tobin,
Kelty Knight,
and Jack Vanek,
and we are the Lady Gang, as in the Lady Gang podcast. And this summer we have something extra special, not just celebrity interviews, but we are helping you Lady Gang your life / get your shit together. What do we have coming up, Kelty?
Hormone expert, nutrition expert,
fitness expert,
sex expert,
dermatologist, people shooting up your faces with syringes, telling us what it's all about.
It's all the important things you need to Lady Gang your life.
Every Tuesday on Podcast One and Apple Podcasts.
And welcome to Dr. Who Podcast. Do check out those swinging sounds at drwho.com/music. Do send us your emails and questions at drwho.com/contact. And do go to drwho.com and check out the family of podcasts that we have there. Me and Spaz, me and Bob Forrest.
It's not just podcasts either. You're posting articles.
We're trying to make that an active site now. So if I go on TV or something and it's interesting, I try to put it up there. I think we mentioned this a couple weeks ago. Me and Wes Chapman and the Human Gathering.
Episode
275. You can hear about him, but you can see both of us in a really interesting interaction. I think the Tom Belue thing here. Impact theory. I think we put that up. There's a lot of interesting stuff up there now. You know what I need to do? I need to update the books because those are getting kind of old now. I got some other ideas. Things move on.
Yeah.
Even though nobody buys books anymore. You know what I mean? Have you noticed that? You don't? No. Audiobooks, yes. Hard books, no.
Well, this is such an easy way to consume like any information and listening.
Audiobooks, yeah. I'm a better audio learner than I am a reader, to be honest. But I do still like to read. I do enjoy reading. There's always Kindles and other things
e-books are the big thing right now.
You know, I don't know why I'm going to say this, but I'm going to say it because thinking about my iPad and Kindle and stuff, I was doing my CME, my continuing medical education. I do this thing called the MKSAP every 3 to 4 years. And it's a gigantic test, you know, 1,000-page test that sort of updates. It's supposed to maintain our medical knowledge on general topics in medicine, or just sort of sophisticated topics in medicine, to make sure everyone's at the same standard and things. It's like taking a board certification test in slow motion. So it's a way of preparing for the board too. We used to memorize the MKSAP as one of the ways of preparing for the boards. And I was just doing it. I was doing a new one this week, and I thought, oh my god, it's sort of dumbed down a little bit. I was surprised. Usually I'm taking that test getting angry at the level of obscurity they take me into and why they chose the topics they choose. This one I was thinking to myself, still the frustration with why the topics they choose, why there was 1,000 questions on aortic stenosis, or bicuspid aortic valve was really what all the questions were about. But the rest of them were like, oh my god, these are sort of basic. These are really like, is that really where general medicine's going? It's what I've always predicted.
This is worrying you, huh?
It's what I predicted. It's not going to be the sophisticated, especially it was, because no one's in it. Everyone's going on into subspecialties, and so they're not holding the standard for the general medical doctors the same. I don't think. I'll see. I'm going to go through the rest. That was just cardiology I just went through, and we'll see as I get through some of the other topics. It's just what, Chris?
Oh, what's the passing rate? Is it still the same, or are there now like a ton more people?
No, passing rates are ridiculous. It's like 50% or something. Yeah, I mean, you only have to get 50% right to pass. So they make it so everyone can pass. But I don't know if that's reflected to the boards or if that's just this CME. People were complaining a lot. Doctors were complaining about the other things that were necessary to maintain CME. Maybe that's where they plan to catch up some of the – I don't know. I know I've done this forever, and it just seemed a lot easier this time.
I think you're just getting smarter.
We've got some interesting questions up there. This is a good one. Let me talk to Adrienne. Adrienne, what's going on there?
Hello, Dr. Drew. What? I asked your producer if I could ask you about what your recommendations are because of all the things that POTUS is signing. You know, I'm so filled with angst about insurance and other types of things and what he's going to do to kill Social Security for those of us who are retired.
All right, let me give you two things. I would argue there's no way Social Security is going to get touched because the other Republicans want their jobs, and that would be death to them. So don't worry about Social Security. That's not going to get significantly touched, in my humble opinion.
Oh, wow. Thank you.
Yeah, I also would not – health care, I'm worried about health care, but I'm just worried about sort of what form it's going to take. I would not worry – I mean, you're in Medicare age. Medicare is not going to get touched either. And I certainly – for those
really?
Of us – No, Medicare is not going to get touched. All the stuff that they're talking about now is Medicaid growth. They're trying to push down Medicaid growth. No, nothing has really come after Medicare. And believe me, Medicare has doctors completely. We're sort of bound to them. We're going to keep taking care of people. That's not going to be a problem. But for those people that don't have Medicare, the rest of us are kind of anxious, and reasonably so. But we just don't let people not get health care in the United States. That's a nonsense that people don't get health care. There's always a safety net of some type. It's just how cumbersome is it, and what do you have to go for, and what a big pain in the ass is it, and what are you really on the line for? All that's going to get worked out. But people are not left to be sick in America. It just does not happen. It's just people stay away from the system because it's so cumbersome, and that's unfortunate.
Yes, it is, because I got this silly call, and I just said, I'm sorry, I don't understand you. And I said, I'm just going to have to wish you a good night and hang up, because he was really making me cry.
Yeah, I know. Listen, here's what I would do if I were you. I would definitely not watch the news. I would not watch the news.
I am not watching any. As soon as something comes on,
you are allowed to. Although not this week because of Manchester, but you are allowed to watch the BBC or listen to the BBC, and you're allowed to read The Economist. Otherwise, I'm sorry, news is shut down for you for your health and well-being. Okay.
Good. And I'm donating blood tomorrow for the people in Manchester.
Great. God bless you. Where in Massachusetts are you? This Adam's going to give me crap.
I'm in Central Mass.
In like Athol, that area, or where are you about?
Oh, I'm south. I'm about 10 miles east of Worcester.
Oh, you're in Worcester.
A town called Northborough.
I've never been to Northborough, but I've been to Worcester many times. And Chris,
okay,
and
so here's at a map, I'm 10 miles east.
And Adrian and Chris, here's the irony about Worcester. It's spelled W-O-R-C-E-S-T-E-R.
Oh, yeah, I can't even pronounce it.
And right nearby is a town spelled W-O-O-S-T-R. Worcester is 20 miles away, and Worcester.
No, it's Worcester. W-O-S-T-A-H.
Poor guys.
All right, Adrian, thank you.
Bless your hat. Consider yourself hugged.
All right, kiddo, bye. Yeah, Worcester is right there. That's the first, because I used to take a bus from Amherst to Boston, and I was like, Worcester's right there, and they can't, and the Woodchester, they have to pronounce Worcester. It's like, they say the Worcester, they can say it. I don't know. Worcester, Worcester. I
didn't know about that. There's actually a city called that. Too.
Called Worcester? Oh, yeah. Funny. There's a Worcester right nearby. All right, let's go to Sebastian. Go ahead, Sebastian.
Hey, Drew.
Hey, now.
How are you?
Good. What's happening?
You guys. You especially have been a touchstone, a shining star in my life, just because I'm a sarcoma patient now. I've been undergoing a lot of treatments, surgeries, and radiation and chemo. Jeez. And all that stuff. And there's a lot of waiting.
Yeah.
And the waiting, I have these old tapes of you and Adam from like the 90s that I totally cling to as the sort of the thing I listen to, like at the dentist or whenever when I'm in pain.
Oh my gosh.
And so you guys have completely, and I mean not you recently you, I mean you 20 years ago you, who have been sort of just absolutely, I've been clinging to as kind of the comedy that gets me through the radiation treatments, that gets me through the MRIs, that gets me through the PET scans, that gets me through the chemo, all of this stuff. You guys are there with me. I just want you to know how like important you are.
I'm so glad we could do that. What recent exposure, take me down memory lane, what recently jumped out from those episodes for you?
There was an episode from 1995 where you guys interviewed the writer and one of the actresses from the Rocky Horror Picture Show. Richard O'Brien and Patricia Quinn were on Love Line in like 1995.
I have no recollection.
I was 20 at that time, a year before my college started. like, you know, all these, and they're old audio cassette tapes that I recorded off the damn radio that I actually have converted and saved all this time.
Wow.
I think there's ways of getting it now, too. I think there's, like, our archives of the old shows on the internet, but I don't go to any of that. I just have these old tapes that I've saved. Like, I feel like I know what your answers are going to be to callers before their question is done. Because
good. I hope I haven't changed my opinions too much. Hope they're still solid.
You are dead on from Drew 20 years ago.
Right,
dead on. It's a real, like, effed up situation. I'm trying to keep my energy. I'm trying to stay positive because, frankly, I've been through a lot of cancer treatment next to a lot of people much sicker than me.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, I feel like the luckiest cancer patient in the damn world because, you know, I'm not frail and I don't need help walking down the corridor. And you know what I'm saying? Like, I am really very lucky despite the fact that I am stage 4 sarcoma straight up. And they call it pleomorphic, which I don't know this word. It sounds like a word for a place. They don't know how else to categorize it.
Yeah, it sort of means they can't categorize it, really. It's just sort of it's fully, you know, sort of... broken down, let's say. It's a broken down
in a thumbnail,
thing.
Like 3 years ago, I had this thing taken off my shoulder. It was a lump. Like, you know, in the cartoon, when someone gets hit on the head, that little lump that comes on their head, that's what it was like on my back shoulder. They cut it off and told me it was benign after they tested it. 3 years later, a couple of other things start happening, and I got a thing taken off of me, and PET scans and stuff revealing that it's now in my lungs, and we're, like, fighting it. The doctor told me, the first thing he said was, look, it's in more than one place, and it comes back, this sarcoma. So I'm like, all right, well, so I'm in for a fight. Great. But I feel like my energy and my positivity have totally tried to, like, I don't want to be the patient everybody sort of is sad to see coming.
Yeah,
you know?
I get
like,
it.
I want to be the guy
that's
tackle free.
You sound great. You sound amazing.
I am. You know what? I am 140 pounds, and I was before this all started. I am the same skinny guy that I always have been. And,
well,
you know,
How long has it been going on?
2013 is when that first shoulder thing was taken off of me, and then the actual diagnosis is about a year ago.
Wow.
No one has been able to tell me. I mean, seriously, I've not lost a lick of energy. I'm in some pain now because there are new growths, and it's still happening. And here's what happened, just in a real fast nutshell. My oncologist recommended a specialist in Seattle at the Seattle Cancer Care Place there, and the insurance company said no.
Ugh.
But a crowdfunding thing was successful. My friends and family stepped up and funded this. I'm on the train this minute talking to you in the middle of Oregon to go to Seattle to go to my specialist. Tomorrow I have a self-pay appointment with my specialist that my friends and family did for me. It was really a very special moment to just see people donating like that.
That
you know?
A big deal.
And it really is. And, I mean, that buoyed my spirits in a way because, you know, I'm trying my hardest to stay positive, but frankly, I'm scared as fuck.
I understand.
I'm hoping this is not on broadcast. I just realized I said the F word. But
you can say it.
Okay. Good.
Enjoy.
I'm
you deserve
terrified.
It.
I'm really fucking scared, to be honest with you.
I bet.
And so my family has been there for me. I've been having a lot of support, but I'm just kind of scared.
I know.
And it seems like we're getting to the point where they're now trying chemo, which they told me at the outset, we're not going to give you chemo because this stuff doesn't respond to chemo. Mm. Well, now it's all there is left to try. And so now I'm trying this chemo that they told me at the outset would not work.
The cancer is moving so fast, cancer treatment.
Yeah.
Any immunotherapies or anything of that sort?
I'm hoping the specialist tomorrow will start me on a list of things he's got an idea for. This guy is supposed to be like the sarcoma guru, you know? And so the fact that I got in on his radar screen at all, the fact that they made an appointment, and then I was able to crowdfund this, like, it's all blowing my mind, and it's happening really fast.
And if you could get into some sort of research protocol even, I would grab it with both hands.
You know, I'm 42 years old. I'm like a super young guy for cancer, and I feel like I'm willing to try anything.
Yes.
But at this point, the pain's increasing. You know, I can't stand or walk as much. I can't really sit up. I found jobs I can do that allow me to work and still earn money from bed. But
what did you do for a living?
okay. Well, I'll tell you. I'm a phone sex operator.
Wow.
In all honesty, it is true.
Is that what you're doing for bed still?
Yes, it is.
Wow.
My callers would never know it, but I mean, it is. There are women there are women for the company that I do this for. Women for the straight guys and men for the gay guys. Women, straight women, do not call phone sex.
What? What?
No,
pick me up off the floor. Are you kidding? Women don't use prostitutes or male phone sex operators? What?
Knock you over with a feather.
What?
I know, but So that's what's up. And it's honestly like been, but the problem is I actually made too much money at it. And now my indigent health care in the state of Arizona has dropped me right the day before a chemo treatment. So I'm working on getting on the air. It is a huge, scary, scary situation. I guess what my question for you is I'm a little uncertain about the end game. And I know you have no crystal ball, but and I know it's in my lungs right now. It's in a couple of other places. Is it my spine and make me paralyzed? Is it going to make me so I can't breathe in my lungs? Like, exactly what is sort of, as dark as this question is, like, how will it kill me?
You know, Sebastian, I mean, it's very hard to predict. Sarcoma is a weird, you know, sort of unpredictable cancer. And sometimes it responds to chemo.
If I could jump in one thing really fast. They first thought, the first test came up melanoma. They thought it was melanoma or possibly this other really rare thing that nobody gets. Well, it is the really rare thing that nobody gets.
This pleomorphic sarcoma.
Yeah, and the melanoma thing, I've had now two different physicians say to me, thank God it wasn't melanoma. Dude, you are lucky that you don't want any part of melanoma. And I'm like, really? Melanoma is better than sarcoma? I didn't know that.
It will accept now you've got the, you know, Jimmy Carter and people, you know, responding to treatments with these newer treatments. Yeah. And again, I'm looking for something like that for you. I'm losing track how this goes down. It, you know, maybe a wasting syndrome, you know, sort of waste.
Yeah.
You've seen cancer cachexia, that kind of thing. Is it brain?
My body weight is still the same, so I'm lucky there.
Are they scanning your head periodically?
Yes. I mean, not real recently, but there have been several PET scans and MRIs and stuff. Both PET scans included my head. I'm so tall they had to go in for like a third pass because there are three parts to the scan, from my head to my stomach, from my stomach to my ankles, and then my feet. So I've got all these images, and I can see it. And by the way, the treatments have been working. Like, the radiation I had for my original lung tumors worked. Those tumors were destroyed by this ablative stereotactic radiation that they do, but it just keeps coming back. And so, like, I'm trying to figure out, you know, I kind of put all my eggs in the basket to go see this specialist, and now it's happening, like, tomorrow's my specialist appointment, and I'm going to go see the doctor here. And
do me a huge favor. Do me a huge favor.
Yeah.
Next time you see us post that we're taking calls, call me. I think I'm next week around this time. And tell him, give me an update.
Okay.
Tell me what's going on.
For sure.
Because I'm fascinated to hear what he says.
It hasn't killed me yet. I'm happy.
You're going to be around. Like, Sebastian, I will talk to you next week. I promise you that.
Okay. I'm glad because, I mean, there have been a lot of friends who have been telling me, look, we're going to make plans for 2019. We're going to do all this. You know, you're going to be doing phone sex calls till you're gray. And I'm like, I sure hope he's right.
I admire your realism. I admire your honesty. But don't give up, and you'll be here next week. You'll be here next week. I pretty much guarantee
cool.
that.
Well, I'm happy to call you and tell you what the doctor says. I'm just like, I guess my concern is that, like, you know, every penny that people donated went to get me in the door.
Yeah.
But if he says, hey, you need this medicine now, or you need this treatment now, or if he says anything you need at all that costs any money, I'm kind of hosed because, like, this is the... Now, the self-pay patients, I'm told, get a little bit of a refund. So there may be some money from the you know, fee that I've paid coming back to me in some ways, but, like... I'm just hoping to lean on you for a little bit of positivity.
Oh, you got positive, but I'm wondering if our listeners can support you anyway. Gary, is there a way we can check his crowdfunding site? Or, you know, it's always...
You can feel free to give out the URL right now if you want.
Yeah, go ahead.
I have it. It's easy. I've been, because of the comedy I've been using to get me through this, I put it in the name. It's sarcomedy.com, all one word.
S-A-R-C-O.
Yeah, S-A-R-C-O-M-E-D, sar and then comedy, sarcomedy.com. And by the way, it's already met. I didn't call you so that I could get donations. I've met the goal I was getting.
Well, I'm wondering about the next round or whatever the treatment is. Yeah.
Right. No, I'm very, that's very sweet of you guys to have allowed me to give that. I didn't intend for that to be this call. I went to my oncologist, and I'm like, I would love a nod from you that I'm handling this in any way well.
The
world's coming to an end. You know?
I get it, and if you didn't feel that way, I'd be more worried about you, frankly, because that would be denial, and I would be sort of perplexed.
Yeah.
But I actually admire you.
You know what? That's what the cancer specialist lady said. She's like, "Oh my God, you actually did that?" I'm like, "Yeah, I did that. I had nothing else I could do."
Well, not just
like,
the did
away.
That. I admire you're a courageous person. You're an open person. You're remaining upbeat, like you said, for other people and yourself.
I wish I could say that I felt brave, But the truth is, I feel like Sully, you know? My plane is going down, and I'm just trying not to crash, and I don't even have a plane full of people to save, you know? Like, I'm just trying to make the best decision at every given moment and communicate as clearly as I can. And I've been pretty successful, you know? Like, I don't want to be crying and sobby in front of people. I didn't want to do this on the air, but, like, you know, it is a scary situation, and... You know, you have been there for me. Like, you probably are part of the reason I've made it this far, honestly, Drew. Well, you really are very special to me. And I mean, and Adam, tell Adam too, less so, but tell Adam too.
I'll tell him that I will tell him.
He's very special to me, less than Drew, but still very special.
All right, my friend. So call me next.
Thank you, Drew.
You bet it, buddy.
Good
luck with this guy, and call me next week, all right?
Will do. Will do.
We'll talk then. Oh, my goodness. This is you guys are give me intense calls. I'm getting overwhelmed. Did I just lose that call about tobacco and HPV? So let me address that. People keep asking. I understand why this is mysterious to people. I brought it up on some show, and people are like, what? Tobacco and HPV? Look, human papillomavirus is responsible for a certain percentage of, or correlated with a certain percentage of head and neck cancers. Like Michael Douglas has head and neck cancer. He himself has said this related to the HPV. HPV is causing a marked increase in head and neck cancers in males, probably from oral sex, anal cancers, of course, cervical cancers, and penile cancers. It is a serious problem that can be prevented with a vaccine. And the fact that I've been screaming about this vaccine for 15 years and people fighting me on it is the most bizarre thing on earth. You prevent cancers of head and neck, so the tongue, throat, pharynx, larynx, anus. But like, just like Farrah Fawcett died, and no one talked about HPV with that, and they should have, penis, and of course cervical cancer. HPV vaccine takes care of it. Now, it is the HPV. We used to say that it was the tobacco and alcohol users were at really significant risk of the head and neck cancers. Now we have found out that, yes, they are at risk. They're at added risk. But those with HPV and tobacco, HPV and alcohol, and especially those HPV with tobacco and alcohol – are at very high risk of cancer of the tongue, throat, larynx, pharynx, those areas. And those are devastating cancers. Those are really rough. Those are if you remember, Roger Ebert had that cancer and had that gigantic disfiguring surgery. I always felt those surgeries are a mistake. Some people do respond to the chemotherapy with these things, and it's just an awful tumor you don't want to get if you don't have to. So let's just raise awareness, get the damn vaccine, limit alcohol and tobacco use, and there you go. Hey, I want to remind you guys about our friend at Alliant University. We'll get back to calls in just a second. But one of the most really rewarding parts of working in recovery is seeing former patients successfully move on. And some of them will walk up to me years later and they have a degree in psychology or they're professional in something. And addicts are phenomenal people. And when they get their disease in remission, they can do great things. And, of course, the field of psychology is big and it needs competent practitioners. There's a lot of opportunity there. And if you're considering it, I suggest you consider the California School of Professional Psychology at Alliant University. I've known these guys for a long time now at Alliant, and I'm proud to have spoken at their past events. It was founded in 1969. It has an alumni network of nearly 50,000 people. I've worked alongside of these individuals during their clinical years. CSPP at Alliant University hosts both on- and off-ground programs in business psychology, marriage and family therapy, clinical psychology. They have APA-accredited doctoral programs in clinical psychology that allow specialization in child, clinical, forensic, and integrated psychologies. Their faculty is made up of really legends, Abraham Maslow, Carl Rogers, Viktor Frankl, some of the fathers of psychology. So for more information on the California School of Professional Psychology at Alliant, click the Alliant banner on my site, drdrew.com, or just visit Alliant, A-L-L-I-A-N-T, alliant.edu. That is alliant.edu. Let's talk with Nick. Nick, go ahead.
Hey, Dr. Drew. How are you?
Good, man. What's happening?
Hey, so I actually called you and Adam a couple months ago about MCT oil, about like helping me with my vomiting problems in the morning.
Oh, yeah. That was crazy.
Hey.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I've been a diabetic for 20 years, right? And so it turned out that the MCT oil did help with the, like, the actual stomach pain part of it, but I found out that what was making me vomit was actually aspartame. So I am, like, highly intolerant to aspartame.
That's crazy.
Yeah, it's used, you know, pretty much in anything that's, like, labeled sugar-free, right?
Oh, yeah.
Aspartame.
Oh, yeah.
And so I get like a 12-hour delayed like vomiting reaction from the aspartame.
Yeah.
Which is, yeah. So, okay, that's not what my question was about.
That's crazy. How's your vomiting now?
It's gone.
Oh, that's
crazy. It is literally, yeah. So I don't wake up with that problem anymore.
Wow.
Just right. From dietary changes. But, okay. So I wanted to ask you about a drug called Elmeron. Have you ever heard of that?
Something used for bladder cystitis, for interstitial cystitis, sort of a weak blood thinner, that kind of thing. I've never used it, I got to say, but I have heard of it.
So let me tell you what happened with me and that drug, and then you can tell me your opinion. So in 2013... you know, when I was about 24 years old, I was having some serious problems, where I would get like stomach pain and it would refer down into, you know, like, the bladder area and further down. And so I went into a urologist and I ended up getting a VCUG procedure. I'm sure you're familiar with that.
I'm not sure what that's standing for. Go ahead. Vesiculocontractility is where they try to see if you're... Yeah, cystic urethrogram.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly right. And it's extremely painful. But what I was left with interstitial cystitis after that. They basically
fantastic.
Destroyed the lining of my bladder.
Oh, my God.
And so from 2013 till about last year, I've been on Valium, gabapentin, cyclobenzaprine, and Elmeron to treat this condition. Okay?
Say them all again. And cyclobenzaprine, Elmeron, and what else?
Gabapentin.
Yeah.
And Valium.
Oh, my God. How long have you been on this?
So, well, I'm off of it now. That's why I'm calling you. So,
how long had you been on it for?
3 years.
Oh, all right.
Yeah. And so from basically 2013 till about last year, I've struggled with maintaining any kind of shred of, like, decency in terms of, like, holding a job, having a girlfriend, doing all of those things that you can't do when you're under the, you know, the shadow of heavy medication.
Yep.
And so, like, I went through the Valium withdrawal on my... I mean, I'm not a person who, you know, likes these kind of things, and I've listened to you my entire life, so I'm very, like, up to speed with your opinion about them, but...
How much Valium were you taking?
So I was taking 5 milligrams a day of Valium and 200 milligrams a day of gabapentin.
All right, not so bad. Not so bad. Okay.
Yeah, correct. And so basically I was able to wean myself off of all of these medications now to the point where, like, I can control my bladder pain with, like, a Motrin 800.
Great.
But one of the things that that I'm calling about is during that period in time, I had undergone multiple like tests for all kinds of things, like bipolar disorder, depression, anxiety, all of this kind of stuff. And since I took my first DISC test, and like I forget the name of the test, but it's like a 500 question test over the course of 4 hours where they try to determine if you have any predispositions to like mental problems.
Okay.
And so the test that I took while on the Elmeron was inconclusive, and it basically ticked the box for, like, all kinds of stuff. And then after I got off the Elmeron, I've had an incredible, I guess you would call it positive experience, where, like, I'm not having cyclical depression, I'm not having anxiety, I'm not experiencing all of these things. And the test that I took actually showed that I have something called... hypervigilance, and I'm exactly like Adam in that respect.
Okay.
And so my question is, what do you think that Elmeron was doing to me, or do you think that it wasn't necessarily that? Do you think it was the cocktail of medication?
I think it's a cocktail. Yeah, the Elmeron doesn't have that much, really any brain activity, so I would think it's got to be the other stuff, which is active in the brain.
Okay,
yeah.
And so the only one that I still, from time to time, take for pain management is the gabapentin, and I occasionally have to take a Valium. Like, we're talking, like, maybe once a month.
Well, if I had to pick one that you should take, it'd be the gabapentin.
Okay.
You know what I mean? The least problematic of all of this would be the gabapentin, especially at the 200-milligram dose. It can still make you drowsy and still, you know, I wouldn't want to take it and have to... you know, function at any, you know, super high level, but it's a pretty nominal dose and a pretty nominal medication.
Okay. And I gotcha. And then I know you're not a urologist, but what do you think the chances of me re-experiencing these, like, incredible pain flare-ups are going to be moving forward in life? Because what I've found out is I'm one of the few males that have this condition.
I know. You. I've never spoken to a male that has this.
Yeah, and
it makes me wonder if it's something that, in fact, so much so, I was thinking, I wonder if this has something to do with maybe more your diabetes than your bladder, like if there's some sort of neuropathy or some, you know, the nerve effects of diabetes are so protean and so can be so bizarre. It makes me wonder if that's more what's going on here. You know what
it's
I'm saying?
It's possible. Yeah. I've been watched for other, like, nerve things.
Yeah.
Like, I'm a professional musician, and so I've started, you know, about that same time, 2013, 2014, I started having weird problems with my hands where,
yeah,
like, I would just drop things,
yep,
randomly, and, like, you know, there's all those little kind of things that 20 years in I'm starting to notice, but I'm 28, and I'm just trying to, like, make sure, you know, I feel like I've put myself into a position in life where I can really succeed, but I have all of these things working constantly against me in terms of, like, how I go about my everyday life. And so I just want to make sure that I move forward with the best process.
I hate to have you think of them as things that work against you so much as extra things you have to manage. You know what I mean?
Right.
You have some extra things. Like if you didn't have a leg or something, you'd have some extra things you'd have to manage. And diabetes is kind of that way. Listen, Nick, you're on top of all this stuff. I think your hypervigilance is more on the anxiety spectrum than – see, what I keep trying to get everyone to understand about Adam is he has this hypervigilance, but he has it with zero anxiety, which is a very rare combination. He barely has a pulse. I imagine your pulse clips around about 88 or 90. His goes around 40, and he's shut down and hypervigilant at the same time. That's the weird combination. That's what makes Adam so unique.
It's a really weird thing, and, like, I've listened to you guys since probably the beginning of high school for me, so, like, 2002, 2003, and I've always, when I listen to Adam, I equate what he's talking about as if it's, like, myself talking to you.
But you get the hypervigilant part. He's definitely got that, but it's a weird hypervigilance without anxiety, and I've never seen that in anybody else, so I don't know what to make of it. But Nick, you keep going. You're in good hands. You're doing everything you need to do. I mean, come on now. You're good. You're good. And thank God you're not vomiting anymore. All right.
Yeah, I mean, it's been a huge change in my life. I didn't get there through any kind of, like, medical intervention. I got there by, like, trial and error and figuring things out.
I think I mentioned this to you last time. I had a suspicion that you said it wasn't gastroparesis, but I still worry that it's something neuropathic. All this stuff has kind of a neurological feel to it. And those are protean and difficult, and I know how nefarious they can be. So you keep doing what you're doing, my friend, all right?
All right, Dr. Beard. I appreciate it.
All right, you take care.
I'll talk to you later.
You got it. Hey, I do want to take a quick moment just to remind everybody about our friends at True Car. They're not just a place you can buy new cars. You can be like Chris Maxipad and get a used car as well, a pre-owned vehicle. Over 70,000 pre-owned vehicles from the over 13,000 True Car certified dealers nationwide. So whether you're looking to buy new or used, get that upfront pricing. You see the scattergram of what's being paid for that particular car you're interested in your area. You'll learn a ton about that car on True Car and the True Car app as well. You also can get discounts off the list price that you can't get anywhere else and a better buying experience. So see what others paid for the car you want, then get that fair price, connect with a local certified dealer, and when you go, you'll be confident because the price you've locked in is for actual inventory for that in that dealer's lot. So an actual car there, it's not some possible car. That car is on the lot and you've locked in the price and you can enjoy a quick, easy buying experience. So when you're ready to buy new or used, visit True Car. Some features are not available in all states. This is Jason. Go ahead, Jason.
Hey, Dr. Drew. Thanks for taking my call.
You bet.
Just found out my father he's just been diagnosed with Parkinson's disease.
Yeah.
And his brother got it about 15 years ago.
What age?
And he was 50.
Oof.
And my dad is 67.
Okay.
but he thinks he's probably had it for a few years.
Okay.
He just said he about 5 years ago he noticed some changes. Now, I have a flipped chromosome, a number 5, and it's been reattached, or I guess that's how you describe it.
Or a transposition.
And just doing research on this, I've been seeing that there's possible correlation with that. Is that, and I guess I'm just looking for any preventative.
Well, I know chromosome, there's some research on chromosome 5 and the 5Q that has been associated with Parkinson's, right? I don't know that exactly what you're describing is particularly the issue. And there's controversy, too, but is that chromosome that keeps coming up? In terms of risk factors, I mean, I would see a neurologist for sure. I would escalate my caffeine consumption because that is something that has been shown to be somewhat beneficial, but I've not seen it specifically studied in the setting of a genetic potential, right? Do you have any symptoms?
No, I don't think so. No, I'll just say no.
Okay. I mean, you're no slowing or stiffness or anything of that sort.
No, I just turned 40 a couple weeks ago, and, you know, other than just the usual aches and pains or whatever. But I also had another, my grandfather's brother also had it. So it's, you know, now it's into the third generation, so to speak.
And how did you find out about the chromosomal abnormality?
My wife had a miscarriage a few years ago and went in and had a genetic test done because of, and I can't recall why they had a name for the miscarriage or what was wrong with it. And we had two of them, actually. And after the second one, that's when I went in and had the testing done.
Can you go back to that genetic counselor and ask what's available for you? What kind of research has been
done?
Yeah, I would go back to that individual. So there's two things that really got to happen. One is go back to the genetic counselor, and then I think I actually hung up on him. And secondly, get the neurology evaluation. I mean, Jason, I'm sorry, the line just dropped on us here. Is there can I get Jason back? Just make sure he gets that information. Genetic counselor, neurologist, and for sure the genetic counselor as soon as possible. Let's talk to Nicole. Go ahead there, Nicole.
Hi, how are you, Dr.
Good. Chris? What's happening?
Oh, nothing much. I'm actually surprised I'm talking to you.
Here we are.
I have had, well, first of all, I've had a DVT and a PE. And okay,
let's explain to people what that is. It's called a deep venous thrombosis, which is a vein and a clot in one of the large central veins in your leg, typically a calf that propagates up into the thigh. When it gets to the thigh, it can break loose. And when it breaks loose, if you don't know you have it or have been treated, that clot then migrates through your heart and lodges in your lungs. And now the blood can't get to your lung, and that's called a pulmonary embolus, PE.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I had two separate ones. The second one, luckily, I caught. And I've been on blood thinners for at least 5 or 6 years, 5 milligrams. And for the past 3 or 4 years, I've had swelling in the right side of my neck above my collarbone. It's not hard, but it's probably the size of a 50-cent piece. And I have seen an ear, nose, throat doctor. I have been to a chiropractor. I have taken antibiotic medicine, and they just cannot figure out where the swelling is coming from. Now, the last ear, nose, and throat doctor I went to said that I had a few nodules in there, but they weren't big enough to biopsy.
So in where? In where?
In my neck.
In there. Where in the neck is it? Exactly. I mean, is it in the front and the side and the top near your jaw? Where?
It's in the side right above my collarbone.
In the side? Does anybody think it's in your thyroid?
Well, I've had my thyroid and everything tested. I've had all those tests and no.
No, those tests won't do anything for telling you whether there's a structural problem in the thyroid. You'd have to get an MRI or a thyroid scan or something or an ultrasound. But it sounds like, how come they haven't done an MRI of your neck?
I have no idea. I've seen probably 10 different doctors, and they have just given me the runaround.
Well, get it and tell them you want an MRI of the neck. That's it. And it's sounding, again, I'm not able to examine you and know exactly what you're talking about, but it's sounding thyroid-esque in terms of its location and its persistence. And thyroid nodules can be totally benign and be nothing. The ENT doctor should have been able to tell you it was in the thyroid, but weird. It could be a leftover lymph node. Lymph nodes sometimes, what's called a reactive node. Nodes can sometimes just stay swollen forever. They can even calcify it for various reasons. But you need an MRI because you can even get weird things like TB in the node and, of course, lymphomas and all kinds of crazy stuff. So, yes, MRI of the neck. Why not? Okay?
Okay. Thank you so much. Right. I have a two-year-old that I'm adopting, and this problem has just caused me so much anxiety.
I bet. I can understand that. But you know, look, if you can define the structure, if you can find the anatomy of what's going on, you can usually identify what that is. But it's going to require some sort of imaging to do so. Which reminds me, there's way too much emphasis people make on imaging. You got to understand something. You know, people think that somehow if you get a total body MRI, that's going to look into your body and see everything that's going on. No, it sees nothing that's going on. It sees nothing. It sees your anatomy. You just see anatomically what's going on. So if you have abnormal growths, well, then we have a problem. But there are a million other ways to detect that without getting a total body MRI. So they are essentially worthless. The only two things you can pick up that you wouldn't pick up by other means, less expensive, and by the way, along the way, being able to define things like what's going on inside, meaning the physiology of what's happening, the biochemistry, the biology of what's happening, which is what your doctor is assessing when he or she takes a history and does a physical exam. The only two things you could pick up would be a renal cell tumor, a kidney tumor, which is exceedingly rare, and a brain tumor, which, by the way, the doctor should have picked that up on physical exam anyway without the MRI. So this whole thing about, look, like a total body scan, like that nonsense. That's why you don't hear so much about that anymore. All right, let's talk to Nick. Nick, what's up there, buddy?
Hey, Dr. Drew. Thanks for taking my call.
You bet.
Yeah, I had a question. My dad is just went through a detox center here in Orange County, and I talked to you a while ago, actually, before he went in for his surgery about his medication that he was on. So he's off all the opiates, and it's been since, I think, early February, and he kind of came off the pink cloud. He's feeling really good, and then now he's just depressed, and he's very resistant to AA, and I don't know what to tell him because my only experience being sober myself is AA. So I, you know, kind of have that mentality of,
there's a little bit of that. I mean, there's a little bit of that. Hey, if you're not going to do that, you don't want to get sober. I mean, that's for sure the case. What about him seeing a professional?
Yeah, and where he lives, I mean, he's up in Tahoe, so there's not a lot, but I mean, I've asked him if he's seen like a, you know, just a regular therapist, any kind of hems and haws. And, you know, he's been on different medications for depression in the past. And he went and saw a psychologist, I guess, but that was literally like, you know, he thought he was going to go in for like, you know, an evaluation. And it was like 10 minutes, sat down with the prescription. What's the problem? What do you need? And moving on to the next patient. So that wasn't really a good experience.
That's what he
told me.
Right. Psychiatrist, probably.
Yeah. I'm kind of at a loss.
Yeah. What about, is he still in pain?
Yeah, he is. He's experienced a lot of it, and it went down a lot afterwards, and he stayed with me for a little while and was, you know, his spirits are really up, and he was happy, and he's walking without a cane and all that, and then, you know, it's slowly been getting worse, and I think it's, you know, probably in his head and just being depressed.
Right.
But, I mean, there's probably some residual pain as well. It's hard to say.
How old is he?
60s, mid-60s. He's born in 52.
He's not that old. What does he want to do?
He doesn't know.
Yeah.
You know, that's why I ask him. Because every time when he went back up to, you know, to Tahoe, I said, hey, get plugged into meetings. And it was snowing, and it was, you know, he couldn't get there. And then finally, he's out of excuses. He just said, I don't want to go, you know. I don't know.
There's a lot of recovery up there. What if you were to sort of just take him and go? You would go up there, visit him?
I thought about that.
I mean, I would do that. I would, if for my dad, I think I would do that because he really needs that. He sounds like he's most, you know how addicts are when they don't replace their drug of choice with something, they get miserable, particularly when they're not using and they're thinking about using, they're preoccupied about it, and then they add pain on top of that. And he's isolating. I mean, of course he's going to be miserable and depressed. I think giving him antidepressants and a therapist and stuff, yeah, those are all good things. It might be helpful, but it's sort of missing the point. It's not specific, the treatment, to what he needs. He needs to be amongst his peers. He needs to stop isolating. He needs to do a little work. But, you know, put his ass in a seat. Can he tolerate it? He's not in such pain that he can't sit or anything, right?
No, I don't think that's it. I mean, that's what he does all day anyways. Yeah.
He's too young to be doing that. That's ridiculous.
I know. So, but professionally, so I like that suggestion, and I think I'll do that. I'll go up there and try to just, you know, walk him in. But as far as, like, professionals, psychiatrists, I'm not too familiar with the differences, but what should he do on that level?
He should see a it sounds like this, what if for whatever reason the psychiatrist didn't work out for him. He should see a psychologist. And you know what I would do if I were you is I would go to the meetings and ask around there and talk to recovering people, like, who is a good psychologist that really understands this condition? It can help my dad. That's it. And maybe plan to go to more than one meeting so your dad can't say, I don't like that meeting. I don't like those people. Go to two or three meetings and ask in each one of them, like, you guys, are your names a good psychologist? People that understand this? People that work with this? And I bet you get some great referrals that way. Okay?
All right. Thanks a lot.
All right, Nick. Let me know what happens. Good job.
Okay.
All right. Good luck. All righty. Woo. Intense shows, these call-in shows. Appreciate you guys calling. Appreciate you all listening. Appreciate you all supporting us at Doctor.com and keeping wins in the sales of the Corolla Empire. We got to rename this. It's not a pirate ship. It could be a pirate ship. It looks like those ones that are in the new Johnny Depp film. Those gigantic ships. Those warships. It's not a pirate ship. It's a warship. A galleon. It's a galleon.
We don't get Paul McCartney stopping around here, so.
Huh?
He's got a cameo in that movie.
Oh, I see. Okay, well, maybe you guys, who knows, you guys. All right, thank you all for listening. Again, check out Doctor.com, check the family podcast there, and I'll see you next time.
For call-in times and topics, follow the show on Twitter at Dr. Drew Podcast. That's D-R-D-R-E-W Podcast. The music from today's episode can be found on the Swingin' Sounds of the Dr. Drew Podcast, now available on iTunes. And while you're there, don't forget to rate the show. The Dr. Drew Podcast is a Corolla Digital production and is produced by Chris Loxamana and Gary Smith. For more information, go to drdrew.com.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.